Today is Tuesday, September 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Hurricane Dorian continues to move toward the United States at a snail's pace, hammering the Bahamas.
The initial reports from Abaco is that the devastation is unprecedented.
Also ahead, with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson committed to Brexit, France begins to prepare, and Hong Kong's Carrie Lam says she has never asked Beijing to let her to resign. Those stories and more are all coming up next. Hurricane Dorian pounded the Bahamas on Monday, killing at least five people and inundating homes with floodwater ahead of its expected advance towards the U.S. coast, where more than a million people have been ordered to evacuate. Reuters' Ryan Brooks starts us off.
Hurricane Dorian has left a deadly mark on the Bahamas. Several people were reported killed after the storm slammed the islands Monday and floods left streets underwater. The U.S. Coast Guard transferred several critically injured people to a hospital in the capital, Nassau. The deaths were focused in the northern Abaco Islands, according to Prime Minister Hubert Minnis. He said late Monday the storm's rampage was a historic tragedy.
The initial reports from Abaco is that the devastation is unprecedented and extensive. They are deeply worrying. The images and videos we are seeing are heartbreaking. Many homes, businesses, and other buildings have been completely or partially destroyed. This is the time for us as Bahamians to show our love, our care, and our compassion for our fellow brothers and sisters.
Dorian has been hovering slowly over the Bahamas for almost 2 days. It's one of the most powerful Atlantic hurricanes on record. The Red Cross and Red Crescent say as many as 13,000 homes in the Bahamas may have been destroyed or severely damaged. The dangerous storm is now expected to head for parts of Florida. The state's governor issued a plea for residents to follow evacuation orders.
Get out now while you have time, while there's fuel available, and you'll be safe on the roads.
At least 9 counties in Florida have issued mandatory evacuations, as well as parts of coastal Georgia and South Carolina.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. Joel Klein is the Tropical Program Coordinator with the Weather Service. He is currently on the phone with us at the U.S. National Hurricane Center. Joel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
I was wondering, if you take a look back at Hurricane Dorian, it was a Category 5 when it first hit the Bahamas. Last information I saw was a Category 2. What information can you share with us about Dorian's current status?
So Dorian is currently, we're grateful for small favors at this point, and it's moving away from Grand Bahama Island, be it 3 miles an hour, but at least there is a movement now, finally, and moving off toward the northwest away from it. The maximum sustained winds are still about 110 miles an hour, and those winds around the hurricane only extend out about 45 miles around the hurricane-force winds. The tropical storm force winds have gotten a little bigger. They're out about 150 miles away from the system, and that's one thing that is pretty common in systems, that when the center of the storm relaxes its winds, that the wind field expands, and so you still have a bigger area that may get under tropical storm force winds or even gale force winds for a longer period of time.
When we were looking at the storm yesterday, for a period of time, it was essentially stationary. Now you say it's moving at about 3 miles per hour, 5 kilometers per hour. What can we expect to see as the storm continues to move? Because I remember hearing people looking for this low pressure trough that was going to move it in a more northerly direction.
Right. We see the low pressure trough is interacting with it and beginning to move it off to the northwest. So all day today and tonight, this should move very slowly but start to pick up speed gradually along the coast of just off the coast of Florida. And then by tomorrow morning, just after midnight, should be in and around northern Florida area, and then throughout the nighttime hours hours and through the daytime hours tomorrow gradually move into the offshore waters of Georgia and the South Carolina coastline by Wednesday evening. Thursday looks to be moving in early in the morning on Thursday into the North Carolina waters and throughout the day Thursday, and then Friday we hope to move it offshore of North Carolina.
Really quickly, in about 30 seconds or so, one of the mantras I've heard is slow is bad. It is moving a little bit faster, but is that of concern, its pace at this point?
Well, it's always a concern because you start to pile up water over a period of time that impacts storm surge. Storm surge values about 4 to 7 feet along the Florida and Georgia coastline. That increases your chance for higher rain totals, too. We're expecting 3 to 6 inches along the coastlines there. And if it tracks a little bit to the west, then you could have higher winds, of course, tracks a little bit to the right, and we would have lesser winds along the coastline. But that slow movement impacts things like rain and storm surge.
Joel Klein is the Tropical Program Coordinator at the Weather Service. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
France has proposed offering Iran credit lines worth about $15 billion until the end of this year in return for Tehran coming back fully into compliance with its 2015 nuclear deal, an offer that hinges on Washington not blocking it, according to Reuters news agencies, Western and Iranian sources. European leaders have struggled to calm confrontation between Tehran and Washington since U.S. President Donald Trump quit the deal, which guarantees Iran access to world trade in return for curbs to its nuclear program. The United States reimposed sanctions on Iran last year and tightened them sharply this year. Iran has responded by breaching some of the limits on nuclear material in the deal and has set a deadline for this week to take further steps. An Iranian official Tuesday said Tehran would be able to resume production of 20% enriched uranium in 2 days. Lawmakers are challenging Prime Minister Boris Johnson's insistence that Britain will leave the European Union on October 31st, even without a deal. British Prime Minister announced his intentions on Monday during a televised address.
I want everybody to know there are no circumstances in which I will ask Brussels to delay. We're leaving on the 31st of October, no ifs or buts.
However, Johnson lost his working majority in Parliament on Tuesday when a lawmaker from his Conservative Party defected to the pro-European Union Liberal Democrats. Philip Lee crossed the floor of the House of Commons just as Johnson began giving a statement on last month's G7 summit. Regardless of the debate in the British Parliament, the EU is getting ready for the UK to leave the Union with or without a deal. But just how are they planning that? To learn more, I'm joined by Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. So, Catherine, with Brexit imminently approaching October 31st, as Boris Johnson says, no ifs, ands, or buts, it's going to take place, how is France getting ready for such an uncertain event?
Well, France, the main point of it is, will be up at the Channel ports, those major ports where a lot of the goods from France leave to go to the United Kingdom and the goods from the United Kingdom come into France. So what they've already put in place there is a computerized system whereby anybody who's exporting to the United Kingdom registers online with the customs authorities, the national authorities here in France, says what they're exporting, which truck it will be in, and what ferry they're going to be on. Now, they have to do that at least 24 hours before they turn up at the port. They then turn up at the port. The officials take a quick check of the registration number of the truck, and on it goes onto the ferry. Now, in between times, all this would have been processed through the computer. Have they got a permit for this? Yes, they have. Is this the product? Yes, it is. Is this the truck? All goes through. And once that truck is on the ferry, then all the details are sent to the colleagues on the UK side over to Dover. So they've been trying this out now for a week. It has got 3 weeks to go, and that will plod through, and they'll see at the end of that if it's all working, and if they've got any glitches, so they're really ready for that 31 October date. On top of that, the French government, along with the other governments within the EU27, have already put in place for UK nationals to be able to apply for settled status, i.e. residency within the countries. They will get that automatically if they're living here and working here and are paying taxes here. So a lot of these little steps have been put in place, and really when you talk to officials here in France, they're already saying, look, we expect there to be some sort of disruption, but we've anticipated it. We're putting in place everything we can to make sure it's as minimal as it can be. And when you talk to officials behind the scenes, they say, we're expecting no-deal Brexit, but we're ready for it.
But in this dry run, are they actively trying to report and fix and correct any glitches that are taking place? I mean, everyone's saying this appears to be going fine, but is it really?
It appears to be going fine, but we're in the early days. You know, what's going to happen when it really gears up?
When it scales up, right? When you have tons and tons of stuff going through in this process.
Yeah, and if there is, for example, you know, a glitch, they haven't had a glitch yet. So it just takes one glitch, and then you have your hundreds and hundreds of trucks with produce, flowers, all sorts of equipment, whatever, on a motorway in France in a queue that could be something like, 24-hour delay. The French side are being honest, and they're saying that if you don't have this paperwork, if there's something wrong, you could be facing a six-hour delay. So that's even if everything's going well and you turn up at the port and you suddenly discover you didn't fill in the form right or there's a documentation missing. They're saying there's going to be a six-hour delay there. So that is still best-case scenario.
Catherine Field is in Paris. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Steve.
Among other top stories in the world, two U.S. lawmakers who Russia says are banned from entering the country say they will still join the same congressional delegation that is going to the country, but visit just Ukraine, Serbia, and Kosovo. Ukraine's parliament has voted in favor of canceling immunity from prosecution for lawmakers, a step forward by President Volodymyr Zelensky's pledge to stamp out corruption. South Africa's president condemned days of widespread looting and arson attacks on foreign-owned businesses across Johannesburg and the capital, Pretoria, calling the violence totally unacceptable. You can find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And don't forget, you can take our stories with you 24 hours a day. This is VOA News.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said Tuesday she has never asked the Chinese government to let her resign to end the city's political crisis, responding to a Reuters report about a voice recording of her saying that she would step down if she could. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy reports.
Your answer does not arise. I have never tendered any resignation.
Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam was forced to respond to a Reuters special report on Tuesday. The report included leaked audio from a private meeting. She's heard telling a group of business people she would resign if she could, and that she's stuck between two masters.
For a chief executive to have caused this huge havoc to Hong Kong is unforgivable. is just unforgivable. If I have a choice, the first thing is to quit. Having made a deep apology, is to step down. The room, the political room for the chief executive, who unfortunately has to serve two masters by constitution, that is the Central People's Government and the people of Hong Kong, that political room for maneuvering is very, very, very limited.
Lam's resignation is one of the key demands of protesters who want her gone after she tried to pass a hugely unpopular extradition bill that would have seen suspects sent to mainland China for trial. It's since morphed into calls for the people of Hong Kong to be able to choose their own chief executive. Rolling protests show no signs of losing steam, despite more than 1,000 arrests since the outbreak of violence. On Tuesday, Lam said Beijing still trusts her government to solve this three-month crisis and that they'd never prevented her from stepping down.
In a private session, I just attempted to explain that as an individual, given the very difficult circumstances, might be it was an easy choice to leave. But I told myself repeatedly in the last 3 months that I and my team should stay on to help Hong Kong.
Later on Tuesday, China's Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office said anyone who wants to achieve universal suffrage in a Chinese-ruled city will get nowhere, and reiterated Beijing's support for the embattled Carrie Lam.
And that's Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy. Fashion retailer Zara is the latest company to make a public statement trying to distance itself from the protests that have engulfed the city for 3 months. Justin Solomon is a reporter based in the Special Administrative Region. So, Justin, today, Tuesday, is becoming known as Apology Day, as several companies are making public statements that they support one country, two systems as the protests in Hong Kong continue for 3 months now. I'm really curious, what challenges are facing these businesses that operate both in mainland China and Hong Kong that they feel they have to come out and make these statements, and what's been the reaction?
Well, look, these companies are in a really tricky spot. They're kind of stuck in the middle, if you will. China is a huge growth driver for so many of these global companies, from clothing giants to food and beverage companies. So if a company takes the side of protesters, there's a good chance that Beijing will put the pressure on. So these companies have had to come out and say, look, we are supporting the current system. We are not supporting the protesters. They're not coming out and saying they are pro-Beijing, but they're certainly not coming out and saying we are against Beijing.
And they're trying to find that delicate line between the two so they don't offend anybody. But that's kind of what's happening, right? Because when Zara, the Spanish retailer, announced on Weibo that they support one country, two systems, that was their response because people were asking why they closed their Hong Kong locations, correct?
Correct. So Zara has 14 stores here in Hong Kong. And on Monday, the day of a general strike here, not all of their stores opened up on time, as the company had put it. And the company blames that on transportation issues with the MTR. Of course, there were transportation disruptions that morning, which could have delayed some of their employees to getting to work. Now, Zara came out and saying all of their stores did in fact open on Monday, just not when they were scheduled to open. So I don't know if that was a reaction to social media chatter, where they realized we need to get these stores open and we need to get them open fast, or if there was something else behind it.
What about air carrier Cathay Pacific?
Correct. So Cathay has a really challenging road ahead, if you will. They have warned their employees that they have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to illegal activity. Now, many of these protests now are considered illegal. They're not receiving the authorization that they did in the earlier parts of this movement. So Cathay has come out and said, look, if you take part in these activities and you are caught, you're out of a job. China, in turn, has come out and said to Cathay, we want to know who's flying these planes. We want to know what staff you have on these aircrafts. We want to know their background and who they are before they enter China airspace. I think that's an ethical question for any company, not just Cathay, as to where they will be willing to draw the line. What becomes more important, business or employee? And clearly, the importance of doing business with China is extremely, extremely valuable and important. I want to tell you about one thing that also happened today. It is mid-autumn festival season here in Hong Kong, and there's a one of the large bakeries here that makes mooncakes, which is traditionally handed out during the mid-autumn festival. The head of this bakery came out and said he supports the protesters. Well, what happened? Nearly instantly afterwards, that brand of mooncake was pulled from online retailers in mainland. So, you know, just a small example of what happens when a company takes a side.
Justin Solomon is in Hong Kong. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent study led by Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory provides evidence that a huge freshwater aquifer lies beneath the Atlantic Ocean just off the northeast coast of the United States. The study, published in the journal Nature Scientific Reports, suggests that the mostly freshwater supply is being held in poor sediments that lie below the ocean. The study authors say that the aquifer appears to be the largest found in the world so far, and that it extends about 80 kilometers from shore in Massachusetts down to at least New Jersey. The study suggests that the fresh water was fed to the aquifer from melting glacial ice about 15 to 20,000 years ago. The researchers noted that if the aquifer were found on the surface, it would create a lake covering some 39,000 square kilometers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. A deadly blast tore through the Afghan capital, Kabul, late Monday. The car bomb exploded and sent up a column of smoke and flames. That attack killed at least 16 civilians and wounded 119 people. One victim spoke to Reuters News amid grim scenes at a local hospital.
It was a powerful explosion that collapsed the ceiling of my house and shattered the windows. My nephew was martyred, and my sons, my uncle, my two other nephews, and myself got hurt in the blast.
It came at a same time that a senior U.S. diplomat was outlining the details of a potential Taliban peace accord on TV. Taliban and U.S. negotiators had reached a peace deal in Doha over the weekend, but Monday's bombing and major Taliban attacks in two northern cities in recent days have added to questions swirling around the agreement. That's because it doesn't include a formal ceasefire. The U.S. diplomat, Zalmay Khalilzad, is the special U.S. envoy for peace in Afghanistan. He said the deal would see 5,000 U.S. troops pulled out of the country and five bases closed. That would be in exchange for Taliban guarantees that the country won't be used as a base for militant attacks on U.S. and its allies. The Afghan official spokesman says Monday's blast was caused by a tractor packed with explosives. They also say it was set off near a residential compound used by foreign staff of international groups, including aid organizations. A Taliban spokesman said the attack had destroyed rooms and offices of, quote, invaders. And before we go today, we're going to take a quick look back in time. It was on this day in 1783, representatives from the United States and Britain signed the Treaty of Paris, which officially ended the U.S. Revolutionary War. And in 1976, America's Viking 2 lander touched down on Mars to make the first close-up color photographs of the red planet's surface. And with that, that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Bill Andrade, and managing editor Kate Pound-Dawson, thank you so much for listening. You'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news on our VOA News website. And don't forget, by downloading our mobile application, you can take our stories with you anytime, day or night, on your mobile device. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Make it a great day.